Oh, hey, gang, we're back.
Hey, gang.
Reading to strangers. Contrary to popular belief, I am still alive. The podcast still exists. The Twitter trolls are out in full force because I've recently deactivated my Facebook account to take a vacation, to take a break from the internet, take a break from everything. I've just been painting little Warhammer toys, prepping my orc army for a 1,500 point tournament later on in the month.
And, you sure have. This place is full of them.
I had to convert my kitchen back from my Warhammer workbench back into the podcast studio. But we're good. We're good. And I'm joined, if you heard, I'm joined by special guests. For the first time on Reading to Strangers, we have fucking Strange Fiction.
Did you forget his
head
name?
Editor. I forgot what to say. I forgot what his title was. I was going to say Strange House Books editor Sean Ferrari, but that's a long past title. Strange Fiction editor Sean Ferrari.
That's me.
And his wife, the beautiful Katie Ferrari.
That's right.
And you will hear from time to time, little baby Austin Ferrari is also in the house. Let's give it up for little baby Austin.
All right, Austin.
All right.
Yeah, you little shit.
Podcast debut.
You guys, it's been an eventful year for you guys. You guys got married last year.
Yeah.
Shit's gone down.
And you guys had a BB. Mm-hmm. Had a little BB.
Right about exactly 9 months later.
And that's why we don't have a new Kevin Strange book.
Yeah, so blame him. Don't blame me for dragging my feet editing it.
Just blame little,
blame that little guy.
Little Austin.
Yeah.
So this is the first time you guys have been on Reading to Strangers, but you guys have been around basically since the beginning existence of Kevin Strange.
Oh, yeah.
Pre-Kevin Strange, some might say.
I thought you made a movie.
One of the first...
When you were Kevin of Satan.
Yeah.
And then
Kevin of Kevin.
So for those of you who aren't familiar with our old podcast, Reading to Monsters, or interviews, you guys also frequently appeared on the Strange the World vidcast together.
Most of them when I wasn't...
Almost every one of them.
Working, trying to work it from my phone.
Yeah, you would come home from work and try to jump in Google Hangouts and fail.
And then it just froze up every time, just became a running joke.
So new listeners won't have any idea who you are. This is the man responsible for editing almost every book I've ever written. What are the books that you didn't edit? You didn't edit Murder Stories for your brain piece. That was John Bruni.
Did you do all of them? Didn't we?
You did several. Yeah, you did several. And because you had already, like, I Killed Jessica Again, you had already edited that previously.
That was one of the first things you sent me, so that was one of the first things I edited for you. I think I did that right after the original Strange Sex release. I think that was one of the first things you sent me after that.
Yeah. And what else didn't you edit?
Is there anything else I didn't edit?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think there's several things that I'm always like, how did you not edit that? Who did? Maybe that's it. So,
I don't know.
Eighteen releases now, and Sean Ferrari. Yeah, it's a lot.
Well, and there were a couple that I maybe not yours, but I edited before the demise of our run with Strange House.
That ended up getting re-edited or whatever the fuck.
I have no idea what happened with those.
Whatever the fuck happened to them.
They just went up and then... You know what?
Went up in smoke.
Unless the authors sent the edited versions back to them, I don't know that I ever sent anybody else those.
You didn't. No, but they may have. We sent them back to the owners of the books.
Right, for just... final run-throughs and stuff, because I would make all the...
When I sold off Strange House to Seamus and Erica, I sent them all that stuff. So they had all that stuff. Whether or not they used any of it.
You usually didn't even have all that stuff, so I don't know that they got any of that.
I'm pretty sure that...
Like, there was... What did I have in the bag? John Bruni's book.
Yeah, I think...
But I didn't do much with that, because he did a real good job editing that, too. So that was mostly just kind of a read-through. I don't think there was really much change with that. So Andre Duse's book, No Face.
Andre Duse's No Face. Did that ever come out?
I'm not sure. I haven't heard.
And then...
I think it did.
Poor Bastards and Rich Fucks did come out.
Mm-hmm.
Loved that book.
That did come out. Yeah, so I don't know if it was your editing... I don't even know if you're credited as editing...
I don't think I even did much of that one. Some deserve the editing credit for that one.
Written by John Bruni, edited by John Bruni.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he did a really good job. Yeah.
So for those that that are unfamiliar with our history, I thought it would be fun to get you guys on the podcast while you're in town. You guys are in town visiting. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would be fun to rehash for new listeners. There's a lot of new listeners. There's a lot of cat ladies. A lot of dramatic cat ladies that like to listen to this podcast to run to run back and tell authors when I talk about them. So rest assured that John and Andre will be informed by the cat ladies that they have been spoken about.
Ooh.
On the accursed.
Oh no, we raised the strangers.
What do you mean by cat ladies?
What do you mean by cat ladies?
What is happening?
For those cat ladies and others that like to listen to this podcast, because this podcast gets 10 times the downloads and listens that any of the other iterations have. So it would probably not be an exaggeration to say that only 1 out of 10 people listening to this right now even know who you guys are. So let's take a step down memory lane and talk about you guys and where you came from and how how did we all meet?
What
we
brought us to
met
this point in time?
On an Insane Clown Posse message board.
Shit,
that's 1999.
99 or 2000, yeah.
We've told this story before, but like I said, I think 1 in 10 people probably heard it. So if you've heard this before, we apologize. We will definitely be telling new stories along the way, though. So sit back and hear it repeated. 1999, I was growing really tired of the standard, I hate Eminem, everything Violent J says is gospel, like juggalo culture.
That's what I was
sucking
on
Joe Bruce's dick.
Yeah, everybody's sucking on Joe Bruce's dick. And so I was on the internet, and I don't even know how I fucking found it. But I was on the internet looking for like, not anti-juggalo stuff, but just people talking about these things that were clearly, like, the Eminem feud was clearly stupid. Mm-hmm. And juggalos that would jump on that feud and act like they had some skin in the game against Eminem was, like, it was really growing tiresome for me. Mm-hmm. So somehow I did a search on the internet, or maybe it was from Faygo Lovers. Maybe Faygo Lovers had a post or a link to it. Because everybody went to Faygo Lovers back then. Even ICP would shout out the Faygo Lovers website. Somehow I got linked over to what was the original? RealJuggahos.com.
Well, they were a separate website.
That's where I first showed up. I first showed up at RealJuggahos.com, run by a cat named Shatupon the Anti-Clown, who was first generation internet troll.
I'd say that's pretty accurate.
it was hard to troll back then because there was no social media. Mm-hmm. There was the only way to like connect with a whole bunch of people was through like Yahoo Messenger or MSN Messenger or stuff like that. AOL Messenger.
But he branched out to all these different websites.
Yeah,
and all these message boards on all these different websites and kind of brought them back to his website, yeah.
Kind of got everybody that was disgruntled with the juggalo world as it was being presented to us through the lens of just ICP's hotline and Faygo Lovers and InsaneClownPosse.com. People were kind of heading into RealJuggahos.com. And isn't there even a song? Didn't Jamie Madrox say like diss him on a track about? Isn't that where Juggahos came from? Isn't that where the term Juggahos came from? Wasn't it, that's why he called it RealJuggahos.com? Was because of,
Oh, well, yeah, they said something about that, yeah. I just don't remember exactly what or what.
Maybe it wasn't a direct reference to Shatupon, but he certainly told people that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know for a fact he publicly said that lyric was written about him, but maybe he just used the lyric for the website address and then took credit for it later. Maybe that was just a Jamie Madrox diss to nobody in particular. Mm-hmm.
Well, one of my very good friends, to remain nameless on here, worked for them for a very long amount of time. And
all the way up through
just
the...
Just hearing from him, they hated him. Like, they knew who he was.
They knew who he was?
They knew who he was. They couldn't stand him.
Your anonymous source worked there from
from Malenko
through
the Ray Shangri-La.
Yeah.
So a long time, and through probably what many would consider to be the absolute best iteration of
the golden age,
the golden era of Juggalos and Insane Clown Posse.
Sure.
And man, how cool would it be to get him on the podcast and hear a bunch of stories about that? But he says he doesn't because he doesn't want to start trouble. He's had an amicable break with those guys and doesn't want to.
Amicable with some of them.
Is at an amicable place now with them and doesn't have drama or beef or anything with them. So we can leave that at that. But yeah, we have a pretty cool insider that's told us some real fun stories about the ins and outs of what happened during that time. You said that they absolutely knew who Shadapon was and fucking hated him.
Mm-hmm.
That's really funny. So maybe first generation Juggalo troll at the very least, if not the first generation internet troll in general. I'm not sure. Were there trolls around before? I mean, because like AOL,
I'm sure, just in like chat rooms and stuff.
Yeah,
you'd always
chat room
like,
trolls.
In,
I guess.
I used to frequent like wrestling chat rooms on like MSN and AOL and stuff back in the day, and you'd always get those random people coming in there just
talking shit,
just
trying to rile people.
Exactly.
Up.
Yeah.
So, at one point in time, right around the era where Twisted was first set to leave Psychopathic, when they started Magic Ninja Records, or Magic Records rather, with a K, Magic Records. Shadapon claimed to have access to them and that he was going to have an exclusive interview with them that he was going to put on RealJuggahos.com. That never came about.
Yeah,
and
about that.
Shortly after that, he had a meltdown, which he had several of throughout the years.
Yeah, I think
and
he even faked his death.
He faked his own death, and then Real Juggahos closed after he faked his death for at least the second time, and I think everybody was pretty much done with him. So he closed that site, and then who actually started? I told the audience, you guys have heard this before. I've talked about this before, and every time I have to ask these questions again because I forget who started Ninja Chat. Who was the
Ninja Chat was started? So ICP Chat is what it originated as. That shut down. I can't remember the guy's name that ran that.
And that was just the chat room, right?
No, that,
or was,
that was
a message board?
Yeah, it was a message board. And then that went down, and then there was a guy named Stalker and a guy named Tickle Trunk who got together and said, we want to keep this going, because they were trying to just get that guy to give them...
Now, they were ICP chat. They didn't have anything to do with Real Juggahos?
No. Real Juggahos actually... So that came around... quite a bit after that, because how that kind of affiliation came was Ninja Chat was already, we had already started it. It was already up and running. And then Shadapon approached one of us, I don't remember who it was, asking if we, because he was tired of, they had a message board on Real Juggos, but was just kind of tired of dealing with it and running it and stuff like that. So just asked if we wanted to kind of combine it, have Ninja Chat become the message board for Real Juggos, which I think all we really did was set up a sub-forum for it. So we had all these different topics and things like that, and there was just a little sub-forum for it. So that's how that kind of combined was.
And that must have been how I got drug over, was because Shadapon said, hey, come over to Ninja Chat to keep, if you want to keep talking on the boards.
Yeah.
And again, this was all pre-social media, so the only way to keep in touch with your friends on the internet was through chat messengers or these message boards. So it was like this real convoluted process of like setting up new accounts on new message board servers and all this stuff.
That convoluted process of putting in your email address and creating
username. And people made custom signatures, like image signatures and all kinds of stuff. And you got people could like upvote your stuff that would give you like karma and different things like that.
Or minus it
and make it look like you were an asshole. And so all that stuff had to be redone every time you jumped from forum to forum to forum. So there was a little bit of work involved in it. But did I first come over as Kevin of Satan? Was that?
Yeah.
Yes,
that was
Kevin
my first. And so Katie, you were already on?
I came
on the board.
I came in Ninja Chat era, I believe. Yeah.
Where did you find Ninja Chat from?
I have no fucking idea. I didn't. Probably the same way you did. I probably was just looking around on the websites and clicked on their message board and it probably linked me over. I was Winks at Freaks whenever I came on there. So.
You were, when we were testing the microphone, you were talking like this. You should see your little. I'm looking at the monitor here.
I have breasts and I'm dainty and I talk like a lady.
She's got this little dainty.
Since when?
Well, checking is a lot different than talking.
Everybody does that to me. I'm like, all right, we'll do a sound check. Check, check, check. And then they start talking and they're like, so annoying. All right, so you were Winks at Freaks on the Ninja Chat message board. You don't remember how you found it.
Yeah, no idea.
And then old Shawnee here was Fucknuts.
Fucknuts.
And I was Cabin of Satan, and we all just... So this, like, we were all originally just Juggalos hanging out talking about ICP. But we all sort of grew with time, and as our lives changed and adapted, you don't even listen to ICP anymore, do you, Sean?
No. No.
Sometimes we'll
put on like an old CD from time to time, but
many
get,
of us.
I get the question because I have this wretched tattoo on my forearm.
He's got
a Carnival of Carnage tattoo.
Yeah, first Joker's card, bro.
Front and center on the top of my forearm.
You know, Vinny will cover that for you if you don't.
Well, I need to talk to Vinny.
He might bitch at you for covering it because he's a diehard Juggalo, but.
But, yeah, I get the question just because people see it all the time. Oh, are those dudes still around?
Those
I honestly have no idea.
Those ICP clowns, man. Yeah, well, you got that tattoo.
Oh, they're a gang. Did you know that?
Did you know they're a gang? I heard they were a Christian gang.
No, I got pulled over in Colorado a few years back, and the policeman actually started, like, wagging his finger at me, telling me that's a gang and what's that doing on your arm and stuff. I'm like, man, I'm from Detroit. It's just a music band where I'm from, man. That's like any of these old ladies with like a Rolling Stone tattoo on their ass or something.
You got to go to juggalomarch.com and tell them your story, man.
No.
Tell them you've been harassed by the police. You're going to go to the gang march?
There's a march.
There's a gang march called Juggalo March, called the Juggalo March at juggalomarch.com. Mm-hmm. And in August, they're going to march on Washington, D.C. In protest of their gang affiliation, their gang designation.
So they're going to get together as a gang.
They're going to get together with their fucking rags and their face paint and their sagged pants.
Did you hear about
and
this?
All their drugs. You know the naked drug sign guy, the cardboard cutout drug guy is going to be there talking about, y'all need dabs, y'all need doses, $5 doses. You know he's going to be walking in fucking D.C. with
them. Did you hear recently, I was just reading this yesterday, the day before, a guy with an axe at a radio station was demanding that they play an ICP song.
And wasn't it like a 2-hour standoff?
Yeah, it was like a 2 or 3 hour standoff with the police. This dude fucking...
That's diehard. That's diehard, bro.
With an axe.
What a juggalo.
Oh my God.
Whoop, whoop.
Yeah, because you can't find that shit online.
Now ask me again why I want to get this removed or covered up or something.
Whoop, whoop. Axe man. Okay, so... As we move on, our lives are changing. We all still hang out on Ninja Chat. At a certain point, Ninja Chat had nothing to do with ICP anymore.
Right.
And in fact, when Juggalos would sign up on the forum, they would get trolled off the forum. And I would come to their defense.
They come in whoop whoop.
I would come
MCL, much clown love.
I was always the guy coming to their defense going, you assholes, this is an ICP message board and you guys are trolling Juggalos off of it. What the fuck? And people would be like, bro, if they can't handle the heat, they don't belong on Ninja Chat. You guys are fucking stupid.
We were really more like a gang than Juggalos.
It really became a
tight-knit group.
Yeah, it became a really cool little group, and we all had our in-jokes, and we all had different things we talked about together every day, and we all kind of grew with each other and grew with each other's lives. And
well, that's why eventually we just closed it down to people joining it, because what would happen. Somebody would join, and then
they
nothing
would just
good
get
would come
the
of
fuck
it. They would
right
just
off.
Leave, and then eventually it's like, well, we're just here because we want to talk to each other.
Because there was no social media yet.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was a certain point where MySpace finally came around, and we all had MySpaces, mm-hmm. and then eventually, what really killed it forever was Facebook. Facebook was so easy to stay in contact with each other and everybody in the world mm-hmm. that there was no need. It's so hard to even have any message board at all because people just talk in Facebook groups. Facebook groups are like,
yeah, might as well be message boards. Yeah, we have a 517 group
right.
on there.
We haven't even talked about that yet.
Before we get to that, while Ninja Chat was still a thing, mm-hmm. We found out somehow like 2 years into all being friends on Ninja Chat that Katie and I were both from St. Louis.
Yeah.
We had no idea. And I bet our little fucking avatars even said we were both from St. Louis, but yeah, we never noticed.
You worked for how long? Like I worked at a video store. From me?
If you guys listen to Watching with Strangers, the video store that Travis and I talk about all the time on Watching with Strangers is the video store. Katie actually lived 5 minutes from that video store. And so when we found out that she was so close, she ended up coming up there and we ended up becoming friends. And Katie was around for the very, very first attempt I ever made at making a movie.
Attempt.
The very first one. You were in it. You're on the footage that never got anything done with it, remember?
Well, no, because remember you made the Jedi thing.
Didn't do that first.
Oh, no, you're right. We tried to do the very that. First
thing.
The
very first thing we did was we were going to make a horror short called It Came From the Shitter. And that went so poorly because of the guys that I was awesome. Trying to make it with that we rewrote the script a month into filming to be a mockumentary about the horrible experience we were having trying to make a low-budget horror film with a video camera and no money. And Katie was cast as one of the... So after the first attempt failed, you were brought in as a quote-unquote actress in the movie, but you were actually part of the mockumentary.
Right.
And so we started filming mockumentary footage, and we did that for a couple of months, and then that fell apart because, again, the guys I was trying to make this thing with were absolute retards, to be polite. And they just couldn't get the job. They didn't know what they were doing. They couldn't get the job done. But it lit a fire under my ass, and I wanted to make movies. And I always lived on the east side. So I always lived... I did work in St. Louis, but I lived on the east side about 45 minutes away. And so once I stopped working at that video store out there, Katie and I would go sometimes 6, 7, 8 months without talking at all. I would have to track her down. She would like... disappear. She would change her Yahoo Messenger screen name. I would have to ask somebody, what's your screen name now? She never. This was pre-cell phones. Really, nobody had cell phones back then. And then I would finally get back in touch with her. And so during this period between when we tried to make the mockumentary and when I found Katie again, I had made a short film called The Pumpkin Menace. And... I called up Katie and was like, Katie, you gotta come over, you gotta watch this movie. I finally made a movie. And she was all excited, and she came down and we watched. It's a 15 minute short film. We watched this short film together, and as soon as it's over, the first thing she says is, I thought you said you made a movie.
Well, I did think you said he made a movie though.
And I was like, it is a movie, motherfucker. And she was very, I mean, it sounds bitchy, but she was very nice about it and has been in almost every movie I've made.
Not the very first one you made with Heck, which was
Dream Reaper. You had disappeared again.
Yeah, I disappeared again.
And then I actually did make a feature-length film called Dream Reaper. And then when I found her again, I was like, okay, motherfucker, I did make a movie. This thing's an hour and 15 minutes long. It's got 15 people in it. It's, you know, and I don't remember what your reaction was to that movie. Probably, oh, it's okay.
Nice first attempt. Good job.
Gold star. At least you tried. But
it's also the time, though, when everyone was blowing smoke up Kevin's ass, so we really needed me there to tell him and be bluntly honest with my own opinions on it.
Here we go. Yeah, because people blow smoke up my ass, right? I'm not just trolling into oblivion by complete strangers. It's people
now,
telling
us. I meant back when we were doing Hack movies, everyone else was too afraid to tell people. People were too nice to me
at a point in my life. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
There was a point in my life when people were too nice to me. Gang. Boy, how I wish I still lived.
That's why you always came to me and asked me to read things and to look at things, because you said, I am the one who is bluntly honest with you, your own words.
Well, the world has changed, and now I need you to be the person that's nice to me.
I will put anything up your ass that you want
now
me to.
I need you to be now I need you to be the only person that's actually nice to me. While everybody else trolls me into oblivion. So from that movie on, you weren't in Stiff Jobs.
You got mad at me.
I banned you from a movie. Yeah. You were put on the sidelines. I put you in the penalty box for one movie because you blew off filming and lied to me.
It was one day. My boss's mother-in-law's house did burn down. God damn it. He says, he swears that I lied about that.
Your boss's mother-in-law?
Yes, when I was working.
What does that have to do with you?
She needed me to work at the studio.
She didn't want to. She didn't want to film that day. So I had to film. So there's actually a scene in the movie Colonel Kill Motherfuckers. There's a scene where every single person in the movie is in the scene except Katie, and we just don't talk about it.
No, you put me into it.
No, I didn't put you into it. You're just not in it.
You come and do it, and then it's like in the circle thing. I still say my line about.
We may have had to stick you into that. We may have had to stick you into that, but that's because you're standing on the out. You're standing in the kitchen.
Yeah.
But there's a whole nother scene that you're not in, because you weren't, and there was just no way to put you in it. And so I gave Tanya or Eric or both, I like split your lines up between them. They weren't Buffy lines. Her character was always talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Her and my characters were always talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But there's a whole scene in the movie that you're not in because you blew off filming that day. And I had a very strict rule that if you blew off filming, you were fired, and I was never going to work with you on a film again. But since it was Katie, I just put her in the penalty box for one movie, and I let her come back, and she actually, so you took Stiff Jobs off, but man, when we made Cockhammer,
I had something to prove.
Yeah, and you, not only did you do the costume design, you coached your co-actress and made sure, because she was really, really struggling with just trying to say basic lines, and so you were running lines with her, taking care of a lot of things on set that were slipping through my cracks, because I was not only
acting and
I was directing. Writing, directing, and acting. And when Nick would do the filming, remember, I would just stand behind him and watch and like direct him and tell him what to shoot and how to shoot it, and then play it back and make sure it was shot exactly the way I wanted it shot. So for all intents and purposes, I was my own director of photography, the director, the writer, and I was acting as Cockhammer and Hogan in that movie. Mm-hmm. So it was very hard for me to pay attention to everything and make sure everything got ready and people were ready to film and people were ready to go. And Katie was very instrumental in making sure that film came together the way it did. But, so that, we jumped ahead there. We got to jump back. Sean, we eventually left Ninja Chat altogether, right?
You did?
We all did. We all left Ninja Chat altogether. And created a new message.
Well, yeah, that's, we didn't really leave it. One of the people that started it, I guess really the person that started it, that Tickle Trunk dude, he kind of the same thing, just got tired of it, and he had his moods, and he is kind of in kind of a thing that I don't like what I've created has become, and all this weird shit.
Very dramatic fella.
Just randomly closed it one day.
He was an intense, dramatic fella.
Yeah. So, the dude, Stalker, was his screen name. We all kind of got together and said, well, we still want to keep this going. Let's make something else. Which then became, Ninja Chat then became 517.com. Which, because 517 means May 17th is Ninja Day. So that's where the 517 came from. So 517.com started that up, and then pretty much the exact same people that...
Some of us even threw in to pay for the server.
Oh yeah.
I threw $20 at it.
Yeah, I remember that.
I didn't pay nothing.
Of course not. You were probably disappeared for.
I was. I think I was a little late coming to 517. I came back as Katie Dearest too, because we've been doing movies.
Right. So you came back under your movie screen name.
Yeah.
Now, Tickle Trunk, not to be overshadowed, he started his. a rival message board to 517. What was that thing called?
What was that? I forgot.
It wasn't psychocircus.com. It was something subcircus.
Oh my God, I forgot completely.
So after he was all dramatic and was like, we will no longer be ninjas. And then everybody was like, no, we're still going to be ninjas. And we started 517 and we're having lots of fun on there together. He decided he was going to do create a rival site, a rival message board. And by this time, MySpace was in full effect, so it was kind of hard to even get us to go to 517. Like, even 517 was experiencing a fairly lackluster
attendance. With each of these changes and stuff, the
less and less people would come.
Less and less people, yeah.
I mean, by the time...
I mean, the core... That all stayed the exact same, you know?
By the time Ninja Chat was done, or 517 was done, mm-hmm. were there even 20 of us?
I don't think so.
No, well, there's a smaller group than that, for sure.
Yeah.
And I think you and me stuck it out to the absolute end of it, didn't we?
Oh, yeah.
Weren't we on there the very, very end of it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You and me and Stalker and just a couple other dudes were, like, on that message board until the day it...
Zach and
closed.
Matt in there. Revan from Minnesota, he was there.
And so, around this period...
Gady was on and off.
Around the time...
I did whatever I wanted.
Around the time that I started making movies, Sean and I were friends. I wouldn't necessarily say real life friends, mm-hmm. but we had become friends even off the message board.
Mm-hmm.
We were Yahoo Messenger or MSN Messenger, and on MySpace, we were all friends there.
Mm-hmm. That was right around cell phone time too, wasn't it?
But we didn't start texting each other for a long time. It took a while. Mm-hmm. We were Facebook friends before we started texting each other.
So I probably texted Sean before you did.
Most likely,
Maybe.
Well, for the first years and years that I had a cell phone back then, you had to pay per text message and shit. So,
right.
And I'm like, who the fuck is going to text? Quit, just call me, motherfucker.
Yeah, just call me.
Just quit texting and costing me money. This is stupid. Just give me a call. So, yeah, I didn't text anybody until years later.
Didn't I send you DVDs, too?
Yeah.
It was to the point where you gave me your home address. I was sending you DVDs.
Well, so from the time you released Dream Reaper, you were trying to get me to move out here.
Yep.
From that time.
To be involved.
Involved in Hack Movies and help run stuff.
Yep.
From way back then.
Way back then.
Yep. That was before I had a cell phone and shit. You know?
When way before I ever wrote mm-hmm. any lick of fiction.
Yeah.
For those listening that don't know that, most people are like writers, and then they turn their attention from fiction to screenwriting and evolve that way. I evolved the opposite way. I started with screenplays and made mm-hmm. movies, and then switched to fiction in 2011. So it was right around then, 2011, 2012, that I think we finally talked on the phone for the first time. I don't think we had ever even talked on the phone. Yeah. I remember I called you when John Jones beat somebody. He beat out of somebody. Who was it? He fucking manhandled. He manhandled. Was it Machida? Was it when he choked out Machida?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I think it was when he choked out Machida, because we would talk. We were texting by then, mm-hmm. and we would text about MMA and talk about MMA all the time. And I remember I was so excited about that finish that I actually called you and we talked on the phone for a
second. Hear his voice. Oh,
I was like, John Jones is the greatest of all time. And around that period, you were a very close friend of mine when I stopped making movies and switched over to fiction, and you immediately offered your services mm-hmm. as an editor. You said,
"Well, I did that anything. When you first sent me the full manuscript for Strange Sex, because you're like, hey, this is great, we're going to be putting this out in about a week, and you sent it to me, you're like, hey, read it, what do you think? And I'm like, oh my fucking God, you cannot put this out.
But way before that, remember, I had written a bunch of short fiction.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you
sure.
and yeah, I sent you everything. I sent both of you guys. Sure. I sent Katie all that stuff.
I was up. I read it. You had your original binder.
Yeah, I brought a binder, too. You were working at Denny's, and I would drive up to Denny's, and I would let you read the folder of stories.
And when I came out to the tattoo shop, mm-hmm. yeah,
when you would come out to Eastside, you would read that.
Well, shit, now that I think about it, you might have written "I Killed Jessica" again before
he did. Strange that Sex. Was
so. I might have edited that even before
you edited that before that. Strange Sex. Yeah, before their Strange House Books was even a thing. We were working together. You were the editor before that, and that's why I brought you in when it came time for Strange Sex. I was like, bro, take a look at this. And you were like, yeah, hold the this phone, put the brakes on it, let me work on this, and let me get it back to you. And
you didn't even have to pump the brakes or anything. You're like, yeah, we're putting this out in a week. I'm like, fuck, I guess I got like 6 days to fix this.
Yeah, you busted your ass on it. You worked real fucking fast with that. Do you remember, though, that was it that manuscript? Couldn't have been that manuscript. Do you remember there was a manuscript I sent you in PDF format?
Yeah, that was that. I had to...
And you would text me the page number and the correction.
That's exactly what
that was. That was Strange Sex?
I didn't text you. I set up a Word document, and then and you would every email. Time I found something, because we couldn't, for some reason, figure out how to get this PDF to convert, or it wouldn't copy and paste over to a Word file, or couldn't get it to edit, so... That's how I did that first one for Strange Sex. I started a Word document, and every little error, page one, line three.
Line one.
Yeah.
Page one.
All I know is page one, paragraph three, line two.
Page one, line one, word one.
Don't or something.
Yeah, and I would go in there manually.
And the entire fucking 200, did that way.
200 and whatever. 200 and whatever page manuscript you did that. And did it in and did it in 6 days. Like, you've been sitting on my new book for fucking 6 months. You did that whole thing by hand in fucking 6 days. I want to talk about the new book, but we can talk to that. Yeah, we can talk about the dick catalog here in a few minutes. But so yeah, Sean's been around forever, and Katie's been around forever, and. The way my process works now as a writer is I write a manuscript and then I send it to Katie. And Katie's my first reader. She's the one, she'll give me her first impression and tell me things that work and things that don't work with the book before I send it to Sean, sometimes at the very same time. And then I'll send it to Sean, and Sean will edit the manuscript, and then I'll format it and publish it. So this is literally the team right here. This is the entire Strange Fiction team. Is me and Katie and Sean all work together as a team. And it's cool to have a husband and wife as my first reader and my editor, because between the two of them, they will handle my shit. They'll make sure that those books are in good fucking shape.
And she'll tell me stuff, too. Like, hey, have you gotten to this part
exactly.
yet? Maybe this part.
Maybe
he
said just
yeah,
twice
yeah.
in a sentence. We need to fix that.
That shitty fucking writer guy.
But then I'll yell at her, and then she'll sit over my shoulder and be like, point stuff at the screen. I know, I haven't fucking gotten there yet. Just go away.
She's reading.
How do you do this? Quit doing reading over ahead.
My shoulder. And I read too fast, too. So like, I glance at a paragraph.
And she's already found the error.
Yeah.
So that, and we've been doing this, God, we've been doing this for years now, this way.
Yeah.
And so everything I've ever written, except for a few stories in Murder Stories for Your Brain Piece, mm-hmm. Has been done this way.
Well, even Murder Stories, because I was your first one.
You were the first reader read on that.
In your binder thing.
Yep. And Sean edited edited some of the stuff in there. Bruni edited the rest. But you've edited everything else I've ever written, including these the newest book. Do you have anything else you guys want to talk about before we get to the new book? We're about 40 minutes into
the edit, man.
Into the podcast now.
No. 40 minutes. Damn, we talk a lot.
I talk a lot.
Yeah, that's right, buddy.
Austin talks a lot. As far as the movie stuff goes, though, we talked a little bit about Cockhammer. We talked about the other movies that you acted in. But I think that when we did Nixon Hogan Smoke Christmas, that was the smoothest, easiest shoot we did, and it's one of the most complex.
Satan turned out pretty
good. Yeah, but that was one thing in an afternoon that's 15 minutes long. I'm talking as far as the feature length films go.
Oh, yes.
No, your acting in Meet Satan was fucking hilarious when we had you be, what is her name?
Shaniqua.
Which Nixon had been talking about Shaniqua since Dead Shit in 2007. Yeah. And in 2010, we finally show her on the screen for 3 minutes before Satan kills her.
I put pillows in my shirt and used these little fake demon horns that we had as the nipples in there. So if you guys see that, unfortunately they're not my real breast. They are manufactured.
Fake tits.
But Nixon Hogan Smoke Christmas was just, we had all the sets. We had like a plan on what we were going to be doing that day, how many scenes you wanted to get done. And even when we had Snags, like, I wasn't supposed to be the poop eater.
You weren't?
No, remember there was another girl.
No, I don't remember.
Yeah, because I was just the pig minion. But you had another girl that was supposed to show up to do that, and she'd called and said she couldn't come. And I was there helping with the filming, and you said, Katie, you're doing it.
I don't remember that. I always thought I had casted you as that because it was a girl
eating
poop. It
turned out awesome.
It was a girl eating poop. Well, yeah, I mean, it turned out so great because you went all in on that poop eating scene.
It was chocolate pudding.
For anybody that's not seen this movie, I got to set it up for you. So Nixon and Hogan are smoking weed, as always. And Nixon says, "Where'd you get this weed at, Hogan?" And Hogan said, "Oh, I went down the street and got it from the drug dealer or whatever." And I forget what Nixon says, but he's like, "Well, you know, is that all you did?" And Hogan's like, "Yeah," and says it all weird. And then it cuts to a flashback of Hogan like walking up to the drug dealer's house, and the door's open, so he walks in, and the drug dealer is in an adult diaper, and his girlfriend is standing there, and Katie plays the girlfriend in these little dainty librarian glasses, and she does a character like this, very proper and dainty, and she's like,
"Change your poop."
Yeah, exactly. And the guy starts shitting and farting into his diaper, and Katie eats the shit out of the diaper, and it cuts back, and Nixon's like, "That's fucking gross. You just got the fuck out of there, right?" And Hogan's like, yeah, that's what I did, dog. And it cuts back, and Hogan's in an adult diaper, played by me. I'm in an adult diaper, wiping my own shit or his shit or her shit all over my own face and eating it and gagging myself with my fingers.
He was. He's like, "I want to throw up when I do this." So he shoved his finger so far down his mouth, he's going, Not to mention, every time he would smoke when they did Nixon and Hogan anyways... He, for some reason, decided it's a good idea to roll a giant, like,
tobacco.
Blunt spliff of tobacco. So that's what they would smoke in the movies. And every time you would take a hit
and
off
I don't
of that,
smoke cigarettes.
You have to cut for him to go puke over the side.
I don't smoke cigarettes. So we would do these, like, 20-minute long takes of me smoking. Basically, I go from not smoking any cigarettes to smoking a pack of cigarettes in an hour. And I would get sick from, like, nicotine overdose. And I would go throw up. My body was, like, trying to get this nicotine out of my system. And I would throw up. So, anyway, Smoke Christmas was... for sure the smoothest shoot. And again, you were a lot of the reason for that, because by then we were kind of a well-oiled machine.
Right.
And Katie would make sure we had all the props and all the costumes. And you even, like, you came over. I was dating a girl named Rachel at the time, and one of the sets was our apartment. And I remember you put her makeup on her and crimped her hair.
Yeah.
And the two of you had like a girl party, like a makeup party.
Yeah, we did.
And you two looked so ridiculous. For your characters, you two were both in the movie, and you were playing these two slutty college girls. And I remember I was trying to shoot other things. Again, it's one of those things that the day gets away from me because I have so many responsibilities, so many things with my director's hat, my actor's hat, trying to corral Nick, the cinematographer,
right.
And his weirdness. And I turn around, and it's like, boom, these two girls are just... And you had done the same thing on Cockhammer. Once you got your outfit together, you had this... Yeah, and
the card that David Wayne Black wore as his character.
Yeah, that's right. R.I.P. David Wayne Black.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Was one of my special tokens. I brought that, too.
We've been talking recently. Do you have that? Did you end up keeping that?
I still have it somewhere.
I don't know where. I didn't know if he gave it back to you or if he
did kept it. They did give it back. That was actually given to me... at a Chinese buffet by an old Chinese woman who said that Chloe was a reincarnated... My daughter, who was like two at the time, they said she was a reincarnated priest or something like that, and she wanted her to have it.
That's really weird.
Yeah.
I didn't know that story. I'm sure you told it to us back then.
I did.
I'm sure I had 20 scripts in my hands.
I don't give a shit.
And
back in front of the camera now.
So,
stop smoking, get in front of the camera.
What was I getting at?
I
was going to say that we've been talking recently about possibly getting together and doing like a... It's all been almost 10 years since our first movie. Actually, it's been over 10 years.
Yeah.
Our first movie was 2016, or 2006. Dream Reaper was 2006, so we could do like a 10-year Hack Movies reunion thing, and we were talking about for sure having to do a memorial to David Wayne Black, because he succumbed to cancer three or four years ago now.
3 years ago.
He was a great actor, and I wanted to put him in many more things, and one of the things that happens in the movie Cockhammer is his character, he and Thaddeus Starbuckle play Wolfram and Wingate, and he played David Wayne Black played Wingate, and they're murdered in the movie by the main characters, Terrence and Parander. And I murdered those two, the hitmen, who are also, so Stiff Jobs is a prequel to Cockhammer, and in Stiff Jobs the movie's all about those two hitmen. And then they're in Cockhammer, and then they just get unceremoniously killed. My plan was always to go back and have Wolfram and Wingate come back from hell. And in Cockhammer, Wingate is a pacifist, and he wants to get out of the hitman business. And he says they're cursed, all the bad things they've happened, his karma is going to come back on them, and then they die, of course. And that's the tragedy of those two characters. Their character arc from Stiff Jobs all the way to Cockhammer is that Wingate was almost out. He was almost done with the business, and he gets murdered along with Wolfram. And their character arc wasn't done yet. I wanted to write a movie where Wolfram and Wingate come back from hell, and Wolfram has had a taste of the powers of darkness, and he becomes a demigod on Earth, and he wants to he wants to kill all humanity. And Wolfram, who's the savage in Cockhammer and wants to kill, I want to kill every day, I kill him in my sleep, he gets so freaked out by how power hungry Wingate becomes that Wolfram goes to Nixon and Hogan for help. And it's a whole movie about Wingate I've been thinking, do I write it as fiction, as a tribute to David Wayne Black? Because I can't make it now because DWB's dead. But I was talking to Vinny the other day. He was tattooing, and we were talking about the movies and everything. And I was like, you know, because David Wayne Black, he would go up and down in weight. But when he played Wingate, he was super skinny. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know, if we put a blonde wig on you and that bowler hat and some sunglasses, I was like, you could be a stand-in.
We're gonna put David in white paint. He's definitely a little tanner.
He would definitely be. I mean, it's not gonna be a one for one.
We're gonna make him look like demons anyway.
Yeah, exactly. He's gonna be a green demon or a red demon. And I was thinking, you know, as a tribute to, and we would do, you know, at the beginning of the movie, this movie's dedicated to the memory of David Wayne Black. And as a tribute to him, finish off the Wolfram and Wingate characters. Yeah. You know, the actor died, but those characters sort of got left in limbo. And if we ever made another movie, we could have Vinny play Wingate and get Thaddeus back to play Wolfram. And Vinny and Thaddeus are great actors.
Oh, yeah,
so I guarantee you that Vinny would kill that role and be a great tribute to Dave's memory. So maybe we could look forward to that one day. Maybe not. I don't know if I
still get my villain role someday.
I know you want to be a villain, so I don't know. Maybe he'll come back and taint a woman or something and have it be Wingate and some kind of a Katie character. Oh, she's shaking her fucking baby.
Shake this baby at you.
Let's talk about you two, though. How did you two hook up? You guys got sitting there with a baby. We haven't even talked about it. You guys got together.
Well, he always told me he was going to, from the time we were real young, he always told me he was going to kidnap me and make me move to Colorado and lock me in the closet and let me out to make him sandwiches.
That's basically what's happened.
Yeah, pretty much.
So I'm no liar.
I make a mean sandwich.
Same way we met, man.
Yeah, same way. It just, we started, you know, me and him would talk on AOL a lot, AIM, Instant Messenger. And then eventually we traded phone numbers, and he was on my Twitter when that came around. And
sent you dick pics?
No, I never got a dick pic. I sent him my boobs once, and he didn't respond back. And then I didn't talk to him for a few months after that.
Wow. What was that about?
Yeah, what was that about?
I don't know.
Confused look on his face. Like, I don't
remember that.
Yeah, you did. You sent me a picture of, like, Raven's balls or something like that.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. There's butthole, something like that. I remember I was drunk at Kristen's. I was mad at you for doing that. But then I talked to him again because I was working at Steak and Shake, and some reason he said, you don't love me. You never call me. You never talk to me. I said, well, I'll text you every day and tell you I love you for the next week.
Did you?
I did. And that's when we started, like, really talking. We started, like, playing the question
game. Isn't that a cute story?
Well, I don't even remember the first time I really told him I loved him, because I was blackout drunk, he said.
Oh, for fuck's sake. I called him
when I was super drunk.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
My love.
Was this before you guys met?
No, she...
Yeah, this
it was... You said you loved him before you met him?
Yeah.
You were such a sad...
It was...
We were both saying it.
What a sad... Like, you were both saying it?
No, so she... The first time she said it, it was in, like, a jealous rage yelling at me, because of... A girl in the apartment next to me just got that shit beat out of her by her boyfriend. And, like, I heard it going on, so I ran over there and started pounding on the door. And so she answered the door, and he's, as I'm, like, looking at it, he jumps over the balcony. Like, you can see through their sliding glass door. He jumps over the balcony and runs off. And so, like, her dad came and stuff, the cops came, whatever. And then so I'm like, well, I don't want him... coming back, I have an extra bedroom to stay in there for the night. And so, I was telling her about this, and she called me just blackout drunk.
Pissed at him?
This is why. Mad at me, just jealous, because another girl was staying in the other room.
This is why we can't have nice things. Women.
This is why we're married with a baby.
Women are crazy. I never heard that story. That's a cute story, though. Yeah. I like that. You told him that you loved him for a week. And then got jealous over a battered and abused woman sleeping in his house. Mm-hmm. Were you guys already, like, internet dating at the time?
We were. I think by that time we had been talking, like, every day.
Yeah, we were talking every day. We were. Yeah.
But you weren't officially internet?
No.
You were jealous before you even officially internet dating? Because I remember the whole internet dating thing. I remember all that.
Well, this because was we were on tour. I moved out here.
Right. We were this on tour. Katie and I were on tour together with Strange House Books. And Sean, you and I were talking, and I was encouraging you to, you were like, I'm hooking up with her. And I was like, don't fucking do it. Don't fucking do it! And you did it anyway, so I was like, all right, well, if you're going to do it anyway, then come on out here, buddy. And I was encouraging him to...
You don't know how drunk she gets. Well, obviously he does, because I called him blackout drunk.
I think I've even said this publicly before. You, Sean did a great job of putting a leash on you. You were an out-of-control party girl, and I certainly couldn't fucking even keep you on a goddamn movie set, let alone imagine trying to...
Well, you couldn't keep me sober on a goddamn movie set, but I still...
Well, I mean, we never talked about that. Katie's eyes get so... She, like, presents weed very prominently in her eyes. When she smokes weed, it presents in her eyes. And when we make movies, it's a lot of, like, my shooting style is a lot of, like, really close-up, in-the-face shots. I get really close to people when I film them. And Katie would, she would show up sober, and we would talk and get ready for the scene and everything. And then she and one of the other actors would, like, sneak off and smoke a bunch of weed. We'd get ready to shoot. She'd sit down and get the camera up in her face, and her eyes would just be blazed into fucking the next, you know, into the next dimension.
That doesn't mean like, have to be a bunch of weed. She takes one hit, and that's how her eyes look.
I'm like, Katie, you fucker! And she'd be like, what? I can still act.
No, you won't remember your lines. You can't get high like that.
At first, I said that because I didn't know. I didn't know what you were going to do, and I don't think you have... ever had a problem with lions, have you?
No, you've given me some goddamn tongue twister, especially in Cockhammer. I had some lines from
We all messed stuff up, but there were people who just would literally get, like, frozen and not be able to do, not be able to do the job. You never froze up, ever. Not once.
No, I was always ready to roll.
Yeah, they can't hear you when you're...
leaning down. I was always ready to roll.
Yeah, that was one thing. There's a lot of things... A lot of things I had to worry about, but fucking Katie not knowing her lines wasn't one. But her eyes were always completely fucking blown out. And so even after she was like, oh, I can act just fine, don't worry about it, I'd be like, yeah, but you look like you are so fucking stoned in this movie. And she'd be like, so? So what? So what? And eventually I gave up even trying to ask her not to.
Yes, I actually won a battle against Kevin Strange.
So if you watch the Hack movies, you can always see Katie's... absolutely ripped out of her mind.
At least it was... once it started, I had to keep smoking for continuity.
There you go. All right, so we talked about that. We talked about how you guys met. We talked about the possibility of doing a...
reunion.
Reunion and maybe a DWB movie.
Well, you got an offer to do one at...
Yeah, I don't want to publicly talk about that, but we do have an offer. So it's so close to now.
Yeah,
it's only like 2.5 months away. I don't know if I can get anything together to do it, but... maybe for next year?
Next year would be good.
I kind of put out on social media a little bit that I was thinking about doing a a Hack Movies reunion, and I got contacted by a film festival that told me that he would be willing to host the reunion there, and but the show is in October, so it's not something that I think we can do a lo- what I the idea was we would do a local one for all the actors and people that have been in Hack Movies over the years, and and then possibly do one on the road so that people that are in that enjoy Hack Movies on the convention circuit can also come and enjoy a day of Hack Movies. Because the way I have it envisioned, and I don't know if the promoter of the show would be down for this or not, but I want to just have a dedicated room and play everything we've ever done. All the skits, all the movies, all the commercials, awesome. Everything.
Oh, the commercials are amazing. Butt hash?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So between the feature films, we would do the short films and the skits, go all the way back to Pumpkin Menace, Zombage, Fight Night. All of that stuff would probably be close to 10 hours worth of stuff. Yeah, it would be definitely a... So we could have like one whole day, like a Friday or a Sunday at the con, just completely dedicated to just a Hack Movies room. You walk in the room, and it is one of our movies playing at all times. And I could introduce each one. You could introduce some. Well, if you could go. That's the thing, is I don't know who would actually be able to go on the road to do that. And that's why it would just kind of be for a convention.
Which, if it was next year, it'd be a lot easier for us to plan and manage.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's so close right now. And I literally just came up with the idea. We might, you know, do it next year instead. And next year will be 2018 would be the 10-year anniversary of Dead Shit. Which, so would be fine, I guess. That's not my favorite of the
movies. Well, it's the first
all,
one I was in, so that means
first one you were in,
and
first,
Timo.
First one Nixon Hogan are in.
Timo as well.
First one Timo's in. So yeah, there's a lot of firsts that happen next year. It's pretty much almost the whole crew's 10-year anniversary.
Yeah.
So
the crew that stuck around.
Yeah. So that's an idea, but we're about out of time here. But I really want to talk about the new book before we go, because there's a new Kevin Strange book on the horizon while these trolls all over the internet are making memes of me, like eulogy memes, like I'm dead, like they've somehow trolled me out of existence because I, God forbid, deactivated my Facebook. Have you ever deactivated your Facebook?
Somebody made a meme about
it? I got trolls.
Oh, people think you're dead. Yeah.
I've gotten phone calls. I've gotten emails from people asking me if I blocked them. I've gotten texts from people saying, what happened, man? What happened? It's like, deactivating your Facebook is the end of the fucking world. Like, people are making memes, eulogy memes about me. You know, died in 2017 because I fucking shut down my Facebook for a little bit. Because these trolls they're always doing this. There's a podcast that has done no less than 5 podcasts about me. They listen to this show, and then they go and comment on this show because when they try to tag me on social media, people that follow me, all the dramatic cat ladies that listen to this show, will go and listen to that show to see what they say about me. And so this podcast is like creating, like they think they're going to like get big dissing Kevin Strange or something. They're trying to have this like rivalry with me, and they're just retarded. So anyway, contrary to all of that, I actually have a new book that's about to come out called Beetle Brain, with cover art by the same guy that did the I Died in a Bed of Roses cover art, Will Scar. He's got this. You guys have both seen it.
Sick, yeah.
Man, the preliminary art, the black and white art, fuck, it looks good. Maybe one of the best covers. Maybe the best cover since Strange Sex?
I think one of the Beatles needs a dick on it, though.
Needs a Beetle dick?
Well, the cover's always been Murder Stories.
Murder Stories. This rises.
I like Under the Bed.
Which you had that one drawn before Strange Sex even got released, didn't you?
Yeah.
And it took you years and years to finally use it. Finally.
Well, because the thing that happened when the Murder Stories cover is basically like a fully illustrated, beautiful, like rendition of the moment that Jessica comes out of the reanimation liquid in I Killed Jessica Again. Mm-hmm. And when I saw it, I was like, the stories I have for this collection aren't good enough for this. And so I released a different collection called Last Gig on Planet Earth and Other Strange Stories first, kept writing, wrote what I think are much better stories, and then finally put the collection
that fit with the theme better.
That, it also, yeah, it was a lot of relationship, mm-hmm. like evil females.
I like the one where the little kid goes into the woods too.
Yeah,
the,
two hands. I actually, you know how I've been putting out those little chappies? I want to put two hands out as a little chappie. I actually put, if you guys go to the website, kevinthestrange.com, and in the search bar type in the two hands, it's actually a free story that you can read on the website. One of my favorite stories.
That's
really cool. Cool story. A little occult story about a kid getting bullied in middle school who runs out into the woods and accidentally stumbles into a satanic ritual. Oh, it's cool. Cool story. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about Beetle Brain, though. Katie's...
probably the most fucked up book I think you wrote.
Either come closer to me or come closer to me or closer to Sean.
Well, the first thing she said, she finished it. I haven't finished it yet because I'm about halfway.
So I've just to be clear, I finished writing it, and it's been in the editing process for 2 months. That's where we're at. So Katie's already read it reader, and Sean is a little over halfway done.
The first thing she said to me when she finished.
The only thing she said.
To no, me. Not the only. The first thing. Well, it's definitely the most dicks he's ever written about.
So talk about that, Katie. What have I done?
There's probably no less than 15 different cocks in this story. There's
describe
like
in detail.
Little ones that barely stick out of the pubic hair and big, long, thick ones that shine like ebony. And
there's
ones that are short. Yeah, there's beetle dicks.
Beetle dicks,
there's
dead dicks.
There's a dick that gets attached to another dick. There's
stinky dicks.
Stinky dicks, yep. Sven. Sven.
What happened was, when I was out riding with Carlton on the Oregon coast a year ago, I wrote I Died in a Bed of Roses, and we both marathon wrote novels. I finished I Died in a Bed of Roses in 4 days, and Carlton was still working on the book that he wrote, which is called Spider Bunny. He was still working on Spider Bunny, and I didn't have anything to do. There was no internet. There was no cable. We were literally in this little cramped cabin to write. So when I finished writing one book, I just started another book. And I Died in a Bed of Roses, if you've read it, is a very structured book. It's a book that that reveals the mysteries of the book slowly, but it also is chopped up. The timeline is all chopped up. The very first chapter of the book is the last scene of the book. And then it jumps to the very beginning. And then it jumps around through time. But the way it jumps through time, it reveals particular things at particular times that keep the mystery of exactly what's happening with Brian and what is the girl's name in I Died in a Bed of Roses? I don't know. I have so many girls and so many books. I don't remember their names. But anyway,
it was a very sweet book, actually.
It was a very sweet book. So it was very structured. And even though I only wrote it in 4 days, it was something that I had to be very... I spent one of the 4 days was just spent mapping out how each chapter was going to appear in the timeline.
Well, something like that, it's probably best done in a short time like that. Because if you drag that out, you would start to forget things and where you wanted to go with this and where this was supposed to go. I think doing it short keeps your mind fresh in it, and you're not going to fuck up like that.
So when I finished, I felt like I had done a very rigid and structured story. And so since I needed to start another book or story or something, because Carlton was still working, I started going through my folder of story ideas, and I remembered that I had been driving around listening to Danzig, and there's a Danzig line that's like, blah, 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 your feeble brain. For years and years and years, I thought the lyric was, blah, 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 your beetle brain. And I always thought that was a funny line. Like, why is Danzig calling him a beetle brain? And clearly that's not what it was. Feeble brain was the actual line. But the phrase beetle brain, the title beetle brain, stuck with me. And so I put it in a folder in my writing ideas. And I wrote a little synopsis about a girl growing a beetle out of her brain. And hilarity ensues. Mm-hmm. And so while I was sitting there in the cabin, I was flipping through my story ideas, and I saw Beetle Brain. I was like, Danzig. So I opened it up, and I looked at it, and I was like, I had just written a love story, and I wanted to write something completely different. And the thought occurred to me as I was sitting there. I was like, what would happen if this girl who grows this beetle out of her brain basically gets unlimited power to control these beetles and take over the planet? What if she was a hot mess that would put Lindsay Lohan to shame if she was just the hottest mess on the planet? So I was like, all right, well, I'll make her a stripper. I'll make her a stripper, and then every decision she makes has to be worse than the one before it. And she can't, like, she has to not only ruin herself, but ruin the world with her poor decisions or poor choices or selfishness, her dramatic nonsense, just a hot mess, just the typical club girl kind of thing, but dialed up to 1,000. So I did that, and I think I got 5,000 words into it while I was out there writing. Carlton finished up, and we had a nice day that was, we just spent grilling clams and shit after, you never grilled a clam? Katie's looking at me like I'm stupid. So you take a clam, and you buy fresh clams, and you get your grill going, and you pop the clam on the grill, and as the shell heats up, it pops open, and the salt water that's still left inside the clam boils the muscle. And so you have a cooked clam. When it pops, it's cooked. And so you pull it off the grill, and you can scoop out the muscle immediately and pop it right in your mouth and have a clam that's been dead for seconds. It's like as fresh gets. And man, they were delicious. We probably bought 50 clams between four people and just gorged ourselves on clams, jumbo shrimp, just anything we could throw on the grill. We grilled for a whole day and in celebration of finishing our books. And and so I had finished I Died in a Bed of Roses, but I left there with 5,000 words of Beetle Brain done. And so when I got back to civilization here, I spent the next about 3 months writing it. And Beetle Brain ended up being the longest book I've ever written. It's almost 50,000 words.
And you told me that you just kind of let yourself go on it. So anything that came to your mind that you thought of?
The girl just so happened to be a ton of dicks.
The girl I was dating at the time was like pushing me to write more and more disgusting stuff. So I would send her these scenes, and she would be like, "That's it? That's all you got?" I'd be like, "Listen, bitch.
That's all you got?
Listen, bitch. You don't tell Kevin Strange that what he wrote wasn't offensive enough." So I started writing the most fucked up shit with these poor people that I could think of. And there's a scene in this book that is absolutely, and this is the guy that wrote Inside an Asshole, which was the most fucked up thing I'd ever written. And Loch Ness Lay, which is one of the most fucked up things I've ever written. Coming from that guy, I'm saying that there's a rape scene in Beetle Brain he's being raped.
Because
it's not even his dick. He gets a dead dick glued to his dick, and the chick rides him. I mean, that's rape.
Well, yeah.
Why is that not rape?
Because it's not his.
He's not being penetrated.
It's not his actual cock.
He's not being penetrated, and it's not even his real dick, but it's still this bizarre. He's emotionally being raped.
Yes, for sure.
And it is harrowing. It is one of the most fucked up things.
I think the scene that comes after that is
Yeah, it
worse
just keeps escalating. Well, that's what it is. I challenge myself to write every scene to escalate it and make each scene more fucked up than the last scene until the last scene is like you close the book and go, "What?"
That's exactly what happened. You achieved that.
So I'm really excited about this book. Again, contrary to what trolls think, I'm far from done. Far from done with anything. Possibility of another movie on the horizon.
Please.
10-year anniversary screening of the Hack Movie stuff. Maybe a resurgence of Hack Movies. Who would have thought?
I would love it.
Who would have thought?
Everybody else who does Hack Movie did Hack Movies, because we've probably been bugging this man for how many fucking
years?
Since he stopped making them. We've been saying, let's do another one. Let's do it.
Fucking author. I'm not going to make a movie ever again. I'm an author now.
And my longest book yet, and my most fucked up book yet, Beetle Brain, on the horizon. Sean Ferrari?
I'll get it figured out.
When can we expect this?
I'm not giving you a timeline.
This nugget. This gem.
You ain't getting him on record.
It'll be done when it's done, motherfucker, right?
It won't be too much.
I think you've said that before. I think I put him on the spot on a podcast on Reading the Monsters and was like, hey, man, when's this book going to be done? He's like, it'll be done when it's done. You'll know. You'll be the first to know, Dick. guys have anything else to say? Anything else to talk
about? Kevin Strange ain't shit.
That's true. Hashtag Kevin true. Strange ain't
Hashtag
shit.
Hashtag dykes.
Sean.
I got nothing, my friend.
Got nothing, huh? What's your more. First impressions of this book?
I haven't gotten the impression that it's the most fucked up you've written yet, because I haven't gotten there yet.
Oh, you will, sir.
Yeah, that's what this one tells me. So we'll see.
Are you liking it? Are you not liking it?
Mm-hmm. You would have known if I didn't like it.
How do you feel about the evolution?
I told you it's shit.
You've edited everything I've done. Mm-hmm. Am I getting better? Am I getting worse? Do you like the direction my style has taken? Come on, man. This is it. This is your first time you've been on
your the podcast. Editing's
you're my
worse.
Editor. Your editing's getting worse. You're my editor. Talk about Strange Fiction.
You were giving a once over before you sent it over to me.
I don't give it. I actually give it a whole rewrite before. So my method is: I write the book however long it takes—4 days, 4 months, 4 years, whatever it takes. I will not do anything with it. Katie doesn't get a first draft. I don't do anything with it. I put it away and I go back and I write something else. And so after I finished Beetle Brain 6 months ago now, I started writing those Jorek shorts that I started to record for the podcast. So the Jorek the Barbarian stuff was written in between. So I wrote 3 full Jorek novellas with a 4th one to come. And that's the next thing on your plate is a series of Barbarian
and
novellas.
And what's the one thing I've told you that I just didn't like?
You don't like Barbarians?
No.
Oh, well, you got...
That you've written... And I'm like,
So let's talk about that. All right, so Jorek originally appeared in All the Toxic Waste from My Heart, my collection of short stories, mm-hmm. All the Toxic Waste from My Heart. And there was one story that you vehemently said,
mm-hmm. Don't put this
I don't want this in the book. Yeah. It's beneath you. You can do so much better. Mm-hmm. And what did I say?
I'm going to leave it in there.
Because I really liked the character. I really liked the character. Not no less than 2 readers contacted me and said specifically the Jorek the Barbarian story. It's called Lich Tits in the book. It's being changed to Jorek and the Shoggoth Steel for the novella collection. That is my favorite story. Will you write some more with that character? And I said, you're goddamn right I will. And so I've written 3 more stories with Jorek now. And they're all going to be included in a Jorek collection.
Can't always be right.
But no. I mean, for you, it was the weakest story. For other people, it was the best. The reason I left it in was just because of that. Because what one person doesn't like, another person, you know, I particularly like that character. Is that the weakest story I've written that character in? Yes. But I don't know particularly that it was the story that people like as much as they like the world and the character. And that's what I liked about it. Was it the best story in the world? Probably not. Remember, I was trying to write like exactly 3,000 words or exactly 5,000 words or
that's
something.
Right, yeah.
It was for like a submission for like a Cthulhu sword and sorcery anthology that it got rejected from, by the way. So you got it there. You told me it was a bad story and it did get rejected. So, but I think people were reacting to Jorek himself, not necessarily that story. So the fact that I have this these novellas coming, I think you'll like them. More than you can listen to the podcast and actually listen to Jorek and the Swamp Phantoms of Ik, mm-hmm. which I think is a way better story than Shoggoth Steel. But anyway, I wrote those and then I went back to Beetle Brain and I did an entire second draft. I always put a book in the shelf in the drawer, write a whole new thing, and then come back to the manuscript after the first draft and write a whole second draft of it. Which doesn't mean I start from scratch. It just means I start at the beginning of the document, and as I read through, I make changes, change things. Sometimes things change drastically, like Vampire Guts in Nuketown didn't even have pogs in it in the first draft of it. Mm-hmm. It didn't have a king demon. It ended after the queen, or king vampire. It ended after the queen vampire. And as I went back and rewrote it and added pogs, pog blood, people getting high on living blood of pogs, explosive pog semen and all that stuff. I extended it out further and wrote a king vampire to go along with the queen vampire. So that was all written in the second draft of that book. Most books don't have that drastic of a change to it, but Beetle Brain didn't really. There wasn't a lot that changed. The scene that Katie was talking about, the very last rape scene of the book.
The last one.
The last rape scene.
No, I was talking about the before. Second one, actually, which is not necessarily a rape scene. I would say that's more, I don't know how to say it without giving it away.
But. The necrophilia scene?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. That the necrophilia scene and then the final rape scene were both the necrophilia scene was added. That wasn't in the first draft. That was completely new.
Oh, and
that was completely
it's
new
wonderful
to the
for the character. To be the, honest,
yeah,
it's
it
really
was. It, that's what I was like. I was like, it jumps too fast. It goes. You don't get enough of that character after his transition into craziness. You guys don't know what we're talking about, but we're talking about one of the characters goes crazy.
I don't even know what
after getting raped and his crazy rape brain. I wanted him to do more before the end of the book, so I added another scene to flesh out his character more, and then the final scene I added to that too. I wanted it because since it was like an escalation, it was like first he gets raped and then this happened and then the final thing I needed to be the big, you know, I needed to, because again I wanted every scene in the book to be an escalation from the previous scene and to be bigger and crazier than the one before it, so I had to add on to the end in the second draft and make the final thing even bigger and crazier than it originally was. Originally there wasn't a she didn't put her head on a giant beetle body. I added all that in the second draft. So anyway, you guys don't know what we're talking about, but you will soon because Beetle Brain will be coming hopefully this year. And if not, hopefully next year. It was great having you guys. I wasn't going to do another podcast for a while. I'm on a podcast hiatus right now. And the only thing I have left to do right now is finish up the last two serial episodes of Computer Face. For those that are waiting on the conclusion of Computer Face, it's coming. Just taking my time. I'm on vacation right now. Social media is shut down. Taking
meaning
a break.
Warhammer is more important.
Doing a lot of Warhammer painting. getting my orc army up to 1,500 points so I can play in tournaments. And I grind too much, man. I counted up the other day. I've done 70 podcasts in 6 months.
It's a lot of time, boy.
I'm just taking a break right now, man. I don't get paid for this. I want to do something else with my time. And painting these Warhammer toys and learning this game is like really giving me a chance to decompress. I had started a novel called Hollow Rot, a zombie novel, and I've continuously been writing nonstop since last summer, and I've written like almost 200,000 words in a year. And I'm just taking a little break. I've been recording it all as audiobooks. I've been grinding audiobooks out, grinding movie reviews, grinding this fucking publishing house drama for months and months and months. And I just need a break. Just taking
nothing
a break.
Wrong with it.
So, but you guys came to town, and I had an opportunity to sit down and talk with you guys and record a podcast. I wasn't going to pass that up. So this is sort of a one-off. And we're going to go back to quiet time in Stranger World for a while.
So it's been put a pleasure. That in your pipe and smoke it.
Yeah. Katie, got anything else?
Nope. I'm good.
Sean?
I'll have it done soon, my friend.
All right. Remember, gang, keep reading.
All music featured on the Reading to Strangers podcast provided by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. http://creativecommons.org/license/by/3.0/.